Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Dear friends, we are so sorry about the ads. They are a nightmare in every way, but with your donations, we can get rid of ads someday.
Beautiful, Kevin.
Thanks, Rob.
Bach and Harnick are smiling so
your
big
hearts
right
out.
Now. Friends, yes, we are back with a new plea. Much like those adorable puppets from Avenue Q, we are asking for you to give us your money.
For those of you who have headed over to Patreon to throw a little money our way, we thank you so much from the bottom of our hearts.
Your contributions are the only budget we have for this show, and it provided us a new soundboard and better studio space, so a thank you.
Thank you. And as you know, nothing is more fulfilling than talking to the legends of Broadway and hearing them share their thoughts, wisdom, and talents with all of us. However, it does cost money.
And if you want to help us keep the show going, please head over to patreon.com. That's patreon.com. Search for Behind the Curtain, and you can give as little as a dollar a month. And trust me, that dollar will help us more than you will ever know.
Plus, for certain monetary donations, you will get to pick your favorite thing and have advanced knowledge of our future guests so you can ask the legends your own questions.
Ooh. Or you can simply leave canned goods and an original cast recording of How Now, Dow Jones outside our doors if you don't want to contribute on patreon.com.
Truth. So once again, please head over to patreon.com. That's patreon.com to help us out. Thanks.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Rob Schneider.
And I'm Kevin David Thomas.
And this is Behind the Curtain, Broadway's Living Legends.
It is.
Oh, I was going to do the spiel.
Oh, the whole Instagram.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they know by now.
You think so?
I think so.
This is the first time Kevin and I were trying it without our script, so we were very excited.
Dangerous. We're on Instagram. We're on Twitter.
Yeah, what's
talk to us.
What's our Instagram handle?
They're different. I know that.
Broadway Curtain Podcast.
That's our Instagram.
And Twitter is Broadway Curtain.
So there you go, friends. And we love it when you reach out to us. It's really fun. So say hi to us.
Say it again, because I'm going to play like some nice like inspirational violin music.
We love it when you reach out to us. You should say hi to us on the Instagram or the Twitter.
You sound like such a... Can you do your NPR voice?
Oh, I thought... We love it when you reach out to us. Please say hi to us on the Twitter and the Instagram.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful.
Thanks, Rob. Now that we've lost everybody.
Yeah, that's okay.
Hey, everyone. It's the special Tony Awards podcast.
It is,
we have for the
third year in a row. Can you believe
it? Holy smokes. We've been doing this for 3 years.
3 years. And he's been with us since day one on this.
Love it.
He is our Tony Awards historian.
Aficionado, if you will, of the Tony Awards.
He is the one and only Brian Hobgood.
Hi, guys.
Welcome back.
Thanks for having me back.
Three years. Can you believe
it? I know. It's crazy. I'm so old.
No, you look fabulous.
Oh,
you look
thank
absolutely
you.
Fabulous. So how have you been since the last year we've seen you?
Yes. Oh, this year has been fantastic, actually. I've had a really great year. I quit my job.
Congratulations.
Of 10 years. Yeah.
Of
so
10 years.
I was there for 10 years.
That's a life changer.
I know.
What'd you
I know. Quit? Let's say what?
Why'd you quit?
Why did I quit?
Yeah.
Because it was terrible. No, because, it's just time for a change, you know, time for a change. And my schedule was a little crazy, so I figured take some time off, travel, worry about mental health. You know?
Where did you go anywhere fun?
I went to a bunch of places. I went to Caribbean, Barcelona, Amsterdam, UK, all over the U.S.
Amazing.
Yeah, a lot of places. It was great.
Well, congratulations.
You deserve a vacation.
Brian, every year, sees almost every... In the past few years, it feels like almost everything.
Usually everything or almost everything. This year, not so much.
I think you would agree with us that this season really hasn't inspired all of us to grab tickets for anything.
Yeah. I really thought it was going to be better. I really did.
I think we all thought it was going
to
be
better. Do you remember last year at the end of the podcast, we were like, we're looking forward to next season and all these things coming in.
It's going to be amazing.
I am so wrong.
We were all a little disappointed. So I know for you, the fall was sluggish.
It was sluggish.
But you picked up steam in the spring.
I did pick up steam in the spring, yes.
And you also, where were you? You were better in the fall than you were in the spring?
I was much better in the fall. The past 2 months I've not been. I've been,
it's been tough.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about that a little bit later on, maybe why that is. But this is our play episode. So
okay.
We're going to talk about all the plays that have come in on Broadway this year, which is a very exciting moment. Nothing really as exciting as last year, really, until Harry Potter came in at the last second, which you've seen.
I did see it.
Did you do a marathon day?
I did the marathon two nights in a row. So I did a Thursday and a Friday night.
Oh, amazing.
A Tuesday and a Wednesday night.
And it's because I have not seen it, as I have not sold my firstborn to get a ticket yet, because the tickets are so pricey.
I managed to be in that first group of people who was selected by the random Ticketmaster,
Oh, right.
lottery thing.
Yeah.
It was very strange. But
and,
yeah.
I hear that the show is amazing and you don't have to be a Harry Potter fan to still follow what's going on and be amazed by it. Is that correct?
Not even remotely. And we're going to talk a lot about this today, but it's funny because I feel like this, the play categories this year are going to be dominated by revivals, with the exception of Harry Potter.
Indeed.
Which is so good in every respect. So I'm excited to talk about that a little
bit. And so in terms of numbers, we had 21 plays this year, which was eligible for a Tony nomination. 10 revivals and 11 original plays is the number that I came up with.
The interesting thing about that, though, those original plays, so many of them were one-man shows.
Yeah, we had Michael Moore, we had
John Lithgow,
John Leguizamo. John Leguizamo. So it's time for the one-man show to make an appearance again on Broadway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Bruce Springsteen counts as a what?
It wasn't eligible for Tonys, but it's...
He's just there.
You know, he gets a special one, but it's interesting because some people, articles I've read, of course, I've not seen it because, again, the hot tickets this year really are... There's, like, no middle ground. I mean, it's, like, the hot ticket, and it's, like, yeah. But it's... Some articles I've read said it's, like, a theater piece. I mean, it's sort of like a Where We Are in America right now, and it's this sort of, like, older rocker who's pared it all down, and it's a really personal piece, I guess. And I think that's intriguing. I don't know.
And now that he's extended again till, like, what is it, October or something crazy like that, I'm hoping to grab a ticket at some point.
Right.
But yeah, he doesn't want to leave. So let's review the plays that were eligible this year.
Sure.
The first play of our season was 1984, which was a very visceral experience.
It certainly
People were passing out during the show and getting sick and getting nauseous.
Mm-hmm. And having champagne in their seats.
What?
The new theater.
My friends, the Hudson Theater, while this serious-ass play is going on, all of a sudden you hear, like, a bucket and, like, people, literally a bucket with champagne in it and drinking that at your seat in that theater. That is normal in that theater.
Well, so because it's Sonia Friedman, I think, owns the theater, right?
Is that right? Yeah.
One of the UK producers owns it, and they do that. Like, you can order the stuff through the app while you're in your seat, and then at intermission.
It's absurd.
It's crazy. That's
so people are like, what, drunk? I mean, like, it was just...
Yeah. I had that experience seeing Sunday in the Park with George there.
Oh, they did the same thing?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Get yourself a big old thing of champagne and just sit down there and have a good time and watch that like you're at a baseball game or something. I mean...
I'm okay with that if it's a comedy, but 1984, people are just
it was weird. And I know this is not about the concessions at the Hudson Theater, but what I remember is how visceral that play was and the champagne.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
So Tom Sturridge, who was...
And Tom Sturridge, who was great. And I heard Reed Beery was also fantastic in it as well.
Mm-hmm. So we had 1984.
Then the intimate play Marvin's Room was put in the cavernous American Airlines Theater. This was a revival.
Oh, revival! Yes.
Sorry, but it's a play. It does count as a play.
Yes, so I thought we were just doing about originals. Yeah.
No, we're gonna go through the whole season.
Love it
from the beginning. So we had Marvin's Room starring Janine Garofalo.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I missed this one.
Same.
As did most of New York City. So great.
As did all of the Tony nominators because it didn't get one nomination.
It was part of their season, though, wasn't it?
It was part of the roundabout season.
Right. So it was a limited run. You know, it was one of those situations which I sometimes have a hard time seeing them just because they are there for a finite amount of time.
But if you know Marvin's Room, it's this very intimate story, and the roundabout American Airlines is huge.
No, it's a small theater. That's a small theater.
Which one? Wait, are we talking about
the Airlines? Is the one on the teeny one on 42nd Street where Travesties is playing now? It's one of the smallest, like, five
musicals
theaters on Broadway.
And plays. I saw Boys from Syracuse and Big River there.
It feels so cavernous.
It depends
to me.
On where you are.
Yeah.
I feel like the orchestra is definitely feels more intimate.
Yes.
But that balcony does go up pretty far.
But interestingly, the balcony's only like six rows.
You're right.
But it's just so stacked.
Big.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Either way, lots of empty seats for lots of people.
They have subscribers.
One man show, Michael Moore.
Mm-hmm.
Was next up on our list.
Saw that.
You saw that? Did you
I missed
that?
It. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
This is all the fall stuff. Chances are that I missed it.
But you saw Michael Moore, which was his... Actually kind of inspiring.
You were inspired. I was like, it did what it was supposed to do. I mean, it's like, it's what you expect.
I appreciate the fact that he didn't bash the president for two hours straight, which I have no problem with.
Right.
But he was, the whole play was really a call for everyone getting involved in their government.
Oh, good.
And there were some interesting moments.
Yeah.
Like at the end, but you know.
What was that? What happened?
When they had
end?
Like the people that were the two equity actors that were hired just to come out for that one moment.
This
was
a very bizarre ending. Out of nowhere, two muscle men came out half naked and just danced with Michael Moore at the end, which was a little concerning for everybody, but you were distracted by it.
No, I was just like, why is this here? Why
were you
are we
turned
doing
on?
This?
Is that what you want to tell me?
Did he seem to enjoy it?
Michael Moore?
Yeah.
No, he had a hot dog. He was fine.
Okay. Well,
he was just sitting there
is that a euphemism? Or
well, little bit of both.
Okay.
A little bit of both.
Great.
Then we had the revival of Time in the Conways, which I was convinced was Tim Conway coming to Broadway.
Every time I saw it, I saw Tim Conway.
Tim Conway.
I saw Tim Conway. I'm like, he's going to do his dwarf show on Broadway with Elizabeth McGovern. This is going to be great. Did anyone see Time in the Conways?
No.
This is another one that was part of the season, wasn't it?
At the Roundabout?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did not see this. I'm sorry. So if you saw Time in the Conways and you loved it, forgive me. Very exciting. The Court Theater had M. Butterfly. I was so excited for this because I love the play. I think it's one of the best plays
Agreed.
Of the 80s.
Agreed.
I think it's a fascinating story, and especially with so much gender identity and fluidity happening now, I thought this would be such a wonderful piece to bring back.
Yeah, it seemed like it.
And it was not, apparently.
He kind of rewrote a little bit of it.
He wrote, it was Clive Owen and being directed by Julie Taymor.
Right.
Anyone see it? I just heard...
This was the first production of the season that I was excited to see.
Yes.
And I ended up not seeing it because I had friends who saw it early and said, just don't even bother. Because apparently it was rough.
Okay.
From everyone I spoke to, which is sad because it's a great play, as you point out. And Julie Taymor usually at least has some kind of redeeming qualities to her productions.
And this was not one of them. After M. Butterfly came Junk. At Lincoln Center.
Oh, yes.
A play which I feel lives up to its title.
Ooh.
sorry.
No,
sorry.
Rob,
I'm sorry. It was about junk bond kings in the 1980s.
And they tried to... There was a lot of buzz before it, I felt like there was a lot of like, oh, this is going to be
about... playwright who did Disgraced.
Right.
And, and it just sort of did not tell us anything we didn't already know.
Right.
So there you go. Then at Studio 54, we had John Leguizamo in Latin History for Morons.
Which, while it was at 54, Studio 54, it was not a Roundabout show.
Not a Roundabout show.
In fact, none of the shows at Studio
Children
54
of
this
God.
Year
yeah,
have been
right.
Roundabout. They've been renting it out.
Get that rent.
Yeah.
Very subletting.
Yeah, there's well, subletting.
Subletter.
It's interesting because they're also renting out the Sondheim to Beautiful still. Beautiful's still there. So they only have one theater right now, one Broadway theater.
Wow.
And the choices that they're making of what to put in there has been sort of fascinating.
Yes.
John Lithgow.
As we spoke about Time in the Conways already and
Tim
Marvin's
Conway.
Room.
Tim Conway. Excuse please, me. Thank you.
Yes, I'm sorry.
And then we had this big, exciting event happening, which was a new Steve Martin play.
Exactly.
Meteor Shower, starring television's very own Amy Schumer in her Broadway debut.
Yeah.
She was pretty hot this year.
Yeah, and Laura Benanti was in it, and...
Keegan Michael Key.
Yeah, Keegan Michael
Key. Jeremy Sheamus.
Jeremy Sheamus.
And so I did not see this play. You guys did.
Yeah, this was the first thing of the season that I ended up seeing.
Oh, what drew you to it?
The play, well, I mean, I wanted to see how Amy Schumer would do on Broadway.
Right.
And I also love Laura Benanti, obviously. And Steve Martin, I was a big fan of the writing of Bright Star that he did a few years ago.
I loved Bright Star.
So I was curious to see what this play would be like. It's an interesting play. It's a weird play, but I thought Amy Schumer was actually quite good.
Okay.
And Laura Benanti, too. The two men were fine, but the two of them were really the stars.
So you feel that we'll talk about this in a second, that her Tony nomination is a deserved Tony nomination, or is it...
In a sense, it's a weird category this year, so when we talk about that category, I'll get more into detail about it, but yes, I think she's deserving.
After Meteor Shower came Uma Thurman in The Parisian Woman at the Hudson, where I did order a glass of champagne during the show.
Oh, I bet you did.
Did you need it?
Yes, I did. My boss has produced The Parisian Woman.
Oh.
Because they're the ones from 54 Below.
Oh, right.
So, I'm going to...
You're not going to say...
Recuse yourself from commentary?
Is that how that's going to work?
Well, I would hate for it to be favoritism.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's nice.
Also, but it was written by the same gentleman who does House of Cards.
Bo Willimon.
So I heard that it felt very much like an episode from House of Cards.
It does feel like an episode of House of Cards.
Yeah. Bo Willimon actually used to teach, used to work for the company that I quit. my job of 10 years.
So you probably can't talk
a long
about
time
it
ago. So I've been a fan of his writing for quite a while.
Oh wow! Okay, great. I love House of Cards. I think it's fantastic. But this just felt like I'm wondering if you didn't know House of Cards, how you would react.
Well,
to the
I don't watch House of Cards.
Oh, okay.
But I do love his other plays. He wrote Farragut North.
Yes, which is great.
A while back, and then that was adapted into the movie The Ides of March with George Clooney and Ryan Gosling. He's a great writer. He's a great writer, but I did hear that this was a little, I don't know, a little predictable, maybe a little forced based on the time period that we're in. I guess they were doing rewrites up until opening.
Oh, okay.
That's what I had heard anyway. Yeah. But I didn't see it, so I can't comment on it.
So we can't comment on it. Next, we had The Children, which was a transfer from the UK.
That's right. Much talked about.
Which I...
Dystopian world.
I heard dystopian world.
Very well written. Yeah. I too did not see it.
Okay, great.
Yeah. God, shame on us.
I know. I was planning to, and then it closed, and I...
Well, you know, it was a lackluster season. I don't know what else to say in terms of this. I mean, but
then the fewest number of shows that opened in like 10 years or something like that. Mm-hmm.
Now, but you saw our next play, which was Farinelli and the King with Mark Rylance.
I did.
You did see that.
And I really enjoyed myself. I'm also an opera lover. And so I really wanted, one of the most famous countertenors in the world was in it. And so Eustine Davies. And so it was really fun to not only see one of the greatest actors in the world, but see one of the greatest singers. Was it the most well-written play in the world? No. But to see Mark Rylance on stage is always an honor. And so it was, I really had a great night in the theater.
And this transferred from London as well?
Yeah, from what I understand, yeah. His wife wrote it, I believe, right?
Oh, that's so cool.
Claire.
That's right. And because she wrote some of the music, and she's written music before, and she does many, many things. I think it was one of her, I think it's her first play.
Yeah, that's the impression that I got,
It wasn't necessarily the play, the words, it was the whole production that was captivating, or at least interesting.
Then John Lithgow came back to us with Stories by Heart.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. And then this heralded production from the National Theater of Angels in America. It's the first revival of Angels in America to hit New York City.
Yeah. Well, to hit Broadway.
Or to hit Broadway, sorry, right, yes, because we had that one off Broadway a while back. But this was our first big revival, directed by the wonderful Marianne Elliott, who gave us War Horse.
That's right.
Curious Incident, starring Andrew Garfield, Nathan Lane. Did you see it?
I did see it. I did the marathon.
Me too.
Yeah.
I did a marathon day.
I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it. There are things about it that I had problems with, but overall, I really enjoyed it.
I really enjoyed it, but I don't know if I enjoyyed it because I was sitting next to Roma Tori from New York
Stop
One.
It, Roma Stop Tori, it, New York Stop One. It.
And in front of me was Sarah Paulson.
Oh.
And, oh my God, Holland Taylor.
I was going to say it was Holland Taylor with her. Oh, there you go.
It was very exciting.
My favorite lesbian couple.
But then I was a little starstruck. But, you know, we'll talk about that. And then Second Stage opened up its new space at... It's no longer the Helen Hayes. It's just the Hayes.
The Hayes.
Oh, it was just Hayes? Dropped the woman's first name. Like, why can't we still call it the Helen Hayes?
I'm going to, too.
Yeah. Anyway, and that was Lobby Hero, this play from the early 2000s,
right, yes.
Which is the first time it
started off Broadway.
Yeah, it had only been off Broadway.
Yeah.
And this was the first Broadway production of it.
Right.
Which
I did not see it yet, but I really want to see the theater as well. I want to see what they did to
the renovated it. It's nice. I literally just saw this play yesterday.
Okay.
Oh, you caught up, guys.
I caught the matinee, and it's closing this week, which is sort of a shame because I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I heard it's fantastic.
I really, really enjoyed it.
Well, Trip Coleman, who directed it, is a brilliant director,
he
I
is.
Think.
And
he the is. Cast is Michael Cera and Chris Evans. Chris Evans, right?
Chris Evans, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's a good group. It's a good group. Then, after 30 years away from the theater,
bam, bam, bam.
On Broadway, Glenda Jackson came back to
us.
Yeah.
And did Three Tall Women with Laurie Metcalf and
Alison
Pill.
Yeah, yeah.
This is exciting.
And that I saw yesterday as well. I saw that last night in Lobby Hero, the matinee.
Nice God,
you had a busy
day theater.
I did, and I'll tell you, I'm glad that I ended with those two because they were both so good.
Oh, that makes good.
They're both so good. Lobby Hero closes this week, but Three Tall Women's open for a few more weeks. So
okay.
If people haven't seen it yet, try to get tickets.
Great.
Go out there.
And it's always great to see an Edward Albee play on Broadway.
Yeah. Yes.
Right?
I
and to
it.
See Glenda Jackson come back after.
So legendary.
Where was she? Oh, she was just in Parliament.
Oh, you know, no biggie. Yeah. 20 years in Parliament. Yeah. Just like, wow. Oh, what a life. What a career.
God bless. I love her as an actress. I love her as an actress. Then we had the revival of Children of a Lesser God, the first Broadway revival of this, of the 1980 Tony Award winner for Best Play.
It won the
Tony Award in 1980, and then in 1986 it was a movie, and that's how Marlee Matlin came to fame, and she won an Oscar.
Yeah.
Right.
And this was from where is this from? It's a regional production. That
moved in. Transfer. It was.
What's the what? Not Williamstown.
It might be Williamstown.
Was it Barrington?
I feel like Jesse Green. I remember reading Jesse Green's review.
Jeez.
And I think it's Williamstown.
We're very prepared. I'm so sorry. But it's a transfer in starring Joshua Jackson.
Joshua Jackson.
Yeah. Dawson's Creek.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Pacey? No, he wasn't Pacey.
Yeah, he was Pacey.
Was he really?
Yeah.
Of course you know that.
I love that you're pretending not to know
Don't
that.
You dare.
Don't be embarrassed.
Wait, don't you dare.
Can I ask you a really stupid question?
Yeah.
Was James Van De Beek Dawson?
Dawson, yeah.
Yes, that's, yes.
Of the creek.
Yes.
So why was it his creek? I never watched the show.
It was his family's house on the creek.
Oh.
Yeah.
I never watched.
Sure.
There's a porn called Dawson's Crack. Don't watch that.
Ah!
It's not very,
bye!
It's not very good.
Done. I'm done.
But also starring James Van Der Beek.
Oh, my God, stop it.
Which I think is lovely. And then that production of Children of a Lesser God is wish for so much more.
Yes, but we did.
I think we all did. Did you? Anyone else see it besides me?
I did.
No, I'm aiming to see it next week.
Are
oh,
you?
Good.
For free.
Okay.
It's comped out of...
Good.
Beyond belief.
Great. Okay. and then coming in from London, Harry Potter and the Cursed Child, yep. Parts 1 and 2,
yeah.
yep.
which you saw.
This was the highlight of the season for me.
Really?
Plays and musicals.
Really?
It is everything.
Hardest ticket to get.
Oh, yeah.
Hardest ticket to get right now.
Were you a Harry Potter fan beforehand?
I call myself a casual fan. I've read the books. I've seen the movies.
Yeah.
But I'm not an obsessed fan by any stretch of the imagination. Right. But it is... breathtaking. And I had read the piece when she wrote it a few years back as a like manuscript, and it was published before they turned it into a stage play. And a lot of people criticized it then for being sort of off-brand Harry Potter. On stage, it is a whole different thing. It is incredible.
Great.
It's incredible. Yeah.
A very stupid question. Is it adding to the Harry Potter story that we don't know already, or is it an adaptation of parts of the book?
It is an add-on. It's sort of like what happens next.
After.
So the last book of the Harry Potter series ends with flashing forward, I guess, 17 years to when Harry is sending off his middle child to Hogwarts for the first time. Uh-huh. And that's where this play picks up, that same scene. And so it's his child going to Hogwarts.
Oh, how interesting. Okay, great.
But it flashes back and forward through the timeline.
And even if you've never read a Harry Potter book or seen a movie, you'll know what's going on at some point.
Absolutely. And the details that are harder to follow, they have program notes in the playbill.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And now we finally have a something in that theater that's actually going to stay in that theater for a while, which is what they probably wanted for. What do we call that theater now? Is it called the Lyric?
Yeah.
Boy, that's a hard space. That's a hard space.
Yeah, but this is going to run for a long time.
Good.
Incredible.
Good. Yeah. They deserve it.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
And then a revival of Travesties, also which won, I think, Best Play in 1975.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the first revival of this play.
I think that's right.
A Broadway revival of this, which is, I've heard nothing but great things.
I loved it.
You loved it?
I loved it.
And even though it's Tom Stoppard, you were able to follow it, which is
the first act is a little harder.
I always feel stupid. I always feel so dumb. And I had to leave Arcadia because I was like, what the hell is going on?
That's the thing about Tom Stoppard.
Why is Raul Esparza in this? Sorry.
Not that funny.
Shade.
We've talked about that before on a previous podcast. Rob and I have a mutual friend who saw it with me, and he had never read the play. I had read the play previously, and he had trouble following Act 1 a little bit. Act 2 was a lot clearer. Stoppard in general, easier to read than to see on stage.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, because you can actually go back and reread it. You can't ask the actors, do the scene one more time.
Right.
What was that?
Can you circle back?
Yeah. Can you circle back? And then our last two plays of the season, St. Joan, over at Manhattan Theater Club.
Oh, how could I forget? Yes, of course.
Which I saw. I'm going to leave it at that. What did you see? What?
He goes, how did I forget? How could I forget? I know how you could forget.
Yeah, it was... there was at one point where I was like, I'll volunteer.
You're like, me! Like, just me!
Just like set me on fire.
Terrible.
Let's just move on with our lives.
oh, God.
I have so many thoughts about that play. But It would have. Every scene was like 15 minutes too long. Mm. Did you see
it? I haven't seen it yet.
Did you see it? Nobody.
The pace was really like.
And I love Daniel Sullivan as a director. Yeah. I really do.
Me too. Me too.
Because I think he just does. His work, I think, is so fantastic. And this was just one where I'm like, 15 minutes, like every scene. Like, God, let's move on with it. Like, I have matches. Like, we'll just go. Just douse me.
Stop it.
You're terrible.
And then, you're terrible, Muriel.
Terrible, Muriel.
And then the last play of the season that opened was also a revival. And that is The Iceman Cometh with Denzel Washington.
Yeah, I haven't gotten around to it yet. I'm trying to see that next week.
I loved it.
What?
I loved it.
Yeah. I've heard people who love it and people who are kind of ambivalent.
It's 4 hours long.
It's an epic play.
It was my first time seeing Denzel Washington on stage.
Oh, yeah?
I missed Fences. He is so magnetic and charismatic, and it has nothing at all to do with him being a movie star.
No.
There's just something about him that you cannot take your eyes off of him.
He started out on stage. We forget that.
And we'll talk about this when we get to nominations, but I actually think there's somebody on stage who's the star of the show. And I'm obsessed with him.
Does his name rhyme with Schmabed? Morris.
David Morris, yes.
that's the one.
Whose performance in this, I think, is so damn good.
I've always loved him as an actor.
Everyone's been talking about that performance. Actor.
And he should win the Tony Award. I don't think he will, but he should. And that's going to be a crime.
He's legit the reason I'm aiming to try to see it next week, because I want to see him, because I've been told that there's a chance of him winning.
I hope so, because his performance is magnificent.
Yeah.
So, gentlemen and ladies, that is the end of our play season.
A healthy play season.
Well, define healthy.
Well, it's interesting. Quantity that there was over quality? So many more plays than musicals.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
So let's go through our nominations here for our plays, and let's see what we got here. The first thing we'll talk about is best direction of a play.
Okay.
Best direction of a play. So our nominees are, and I promise I will not do what Katherine Heigl and Leslie Odom Jr. did. I'll try to.
Catherine McPhee.
What did I say?
Catherine Heigl.
Which is smoking out back somewhere.
I was like, Catherine Heigl. What are you?
No, sorry, Catherine McPhee. Who I love, Catherine McPhee.
Oh my God. Yeah. It was embarrassingly bad.
You know what my feeling is? I'm like, it's 8 a.m. They're a little tired, so I'll forgive them a little bit.
Mm-hmm. She messed up almost every name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Including her own at one point.
Right.
And then she kept calling them the Tone Wise.
Stop it.
And we don't know why she was saying that. Best Sponge direction.
SpongeBob.
So, best direction of a play. We've got. Mostly revivals here.
Yeah.
It's Marianne Elliott for Angels in America, Joe Mantello for Three Tall Women, Patrick Marber for Travesties, John Tiffany for Harry Potter, and George C. Wolfe for The Iceman Cometh.
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk about egregiously overlooked on another episode, but where's Trip Coleman?
So actually,
from Lobby Hero.
Exactly.
I had predicted Trip Coleman in the fifth spot.
Because, we should tell our listeners, and I think some of our listeners are aware of this, that Brian, before the nominations comes out, posts what he thinks is going to be be nominated. Not even what's going to win, but who's going to be nominated. And your track record is pretty damn good.
Yeah, and this year I was impressed with myself, because since I missed so much in the fall, I thought I was going to be way off, but I actually was better this year than I was last year.
Yeah.
So I was, that's impressed. Great.
So we don't have Trip Coleman. So it's mostly revivals except for Harry Potter. So who do we think is going to take home the best director of a play, Tony?
Yeah. I mean, first of all, I'll say about Trip Coleman, having seen Lobby Hero yesterday, I made my predictions before I saw the show. I haven't seen Iceman Cometh yet, but from what I've heard from you and other people, it's not surprising that George C. Wolfe got in. And of the other four, Trip Coleman being left out isn't surprising to me, because Marianne Elliott, Joe Mantello, Patrick Marber, and John Tiffany all do amazing work. This is probably the strongest category.
You're right.
And
these are all legendary directors in their own right. You know, Trip Coleman's, this is what, his second time on Broadway, I believe?
Trip?
The first one was his.
No, he's been on for a while, because he did 6 Degrees of Separation.
Oh, stupid me.
He did Significant Other, which I'm still pissed got robbed from last
that's
year.
That's what I'm thinking. I thought that was his
I'm
first
still
one.
Angry
you know how I hated that play.
I know, but
it seems like it's going to be John Tiffany, though, because the Harry Potter is such a hit.
It is.
You know?
I mean, it's really a two-horse race between John Tiffany and Marianne Elliott, it's going to be John Tiffany.
Okay. Yeah, I think we're all pretty agreed that Harry Potter's going to take it. We're going to go to some design stuff. This is best sound design of a play. Congrats. Sound design.
You're back.
Is back as a
job, you guys.
We
Good
did
job.
It, guys.
We did it. And the nominees are Adam Cork for Travesties, Ian Dickinson for Autograph, Angels in America, Gareth Fry, Harry Potter, Tom Gibbons, 1984, and Dan Moses Schreier for The Iceman Cometh. So Are we just going to assume that Harry Potter is going to sweep all these design awards?
It seems like that's what happens, right? When there's the design awards.
Sometimes, I mean, there might be one or two exceptions, but I'm going to sound like a broken record. I loved it so much. I would be very disappointed if it didn't win all these awards. That being said, I did not see 1984, and I hear that the sound was
very insane.
Yeah.
Present and effective.
Yes, but yet. It's that whole thing where it's like, how do you quantify best sound design?
Right.
And if the show's not running anymore, that's what I remember is the sound design from that show.
But let's remember that this year, and I mentioned this on the podcast last year, now that sound design is back in play, they are changing the voting rules so that only a subset of the voters are voting on the sound design category.
Oh.
So that it's only the people who specialize in that field are voting.
Huh. Interesting.
So.
That's good.
That actually, I think, makes the
race
more
interesting. Tom Gibbons, you know, what's.
Right. So Tom Gibbons, I think, has a shot. That being said, I think it's going to be Gareth Frey.
My heart is still with Tom Gibbons, and I'm hoping he'll do a surprise and win. Best lighting design. Hold on. Let me go back for a second. So if it's a special subset, do they do that for scenic design or costume design?
I don't think so. I remember that they had mentioned it specifically about sound design.
I do remember that,
because,
too.
Maybe orchestrations, too.
Yes, I do recall that, yes.
Because I think the idea is that anyone can appreciate things visually, but like if you're not a trained ear, maybe you can't.
Wow.
I don't know.
That's so fascinating.
No, it is interesting.
Okay, cool. Best lighting design of a play. Neil Austin, Harry Potter. Paul Constable for Angels in America. Jules Fisher, Peggy Eisenhower, The Iceman Cometh. Paul Russell for Farinelli and the King. And Ben Stanton for Junk. So my money's on Harry Potter.
Yeah.
I must say, Farinelli was really interesting because the whole thing was lit with candles. It was very, very minimal lighting design, and it was all like real candles on stage.
Really?
That was made up much of the lighting design,
sure.
And it was very effective for this period piece. I don't think that Paul Russell will win for it, but it was one of the biggest things about that show was the lighting
design. Did Farinelli and the King start at that new theater by the Globe where it's entirely lit by candlelight?
I don't know if it started it, but I mean, didn't it come from the same company that he did Twelfth Night and King Henry III?
Yes.
Richard III, rather, not King Richard. Because Twelfth Night was basically lit only by candles as well.
The Sam Wanamaker Playhouse, then to the Duke of York's Theater.
The Sam Wanamaker Playhouse is the new addition to the Globe.
To the Globe Theater.
Yes, it is. Yes.
Yeah.
Use of the 17th century plans for an indoor theater. Yeah.
Yeah. Which I think I've never been to that theater, and I always want to go.
All right.
Of the design categories, this is the one that Harry Potter deserves to win the most.
Okay, great.
Okay.
I think. The lighting is ridiculous. Yeah. If I had to pick one award this season to give to anyone or anything, it would be lighting for Harry Potter.
Oh, that's
all right,
wonderful.
So I feel that strong.
Good.
About it.
So that's Neil Austin.
Yeah, and the pictures that are coming out
are
stunning.
My gosh.
Best costume design of a play, Jonathan Fensom for Farinelli and the King, Nikki Gillibrand for Angels in America, Katrina Lindsay, Harry Potter, Anne Roth, Three Tall Women, Anne Roth, The Iceman Cometh.
Mm-hmm. Anne was busy this year.
Congrats to Anne
Wowza.
Roth.
She got a nomination for a musical, too, on the other side of things.
Oh, Carousel. She's got three nominations?
She does. She was a busy lady.
Good for her.
Good job, Anne.
Good, Anne.
We got to talk to her.
Yeah.
This would be the one category where I think maybe Harry Potter could not win. I think it's going to. I think it's going to sweep, and Katrina Lindsay will win.
Like a three-character play with three costumes.
Yeah.
The Iceman has a full ensemble. But
we also know that the voters love to award a period piece in this category because of
yes.
the ornateness of the costume. So I wouldn't be surprised if Farinelli and the King or Three Tall Women won this.
Yeah.
But I think it's going to be Harry Potter.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
I was going to go with Farinelli and the King just because, like you said,
the period.
They love period.
Yeah.
Okay, so now let's take a look at best scenic design of a play.
Mm.
And boy, what nominees we have here. We have Miriam Beuther for Three Tall Women, Jonathan Fensom again for Farinelli and the King, Christine Jones for Harry Potter, Santo Loquasto for The Iceman Cometh, and Ian McNeil and Edward Pierce for Angels in America.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
What was the set for Harry Potter like?
Oh,
okay,
I can't,
there it is.
So it's not.
I mean,
one,
they had to redo the whole theater, so it's the whole theater basically.
It's
is the set.
It is incredible. So the thing about the set is it's actually surprisingly small scale.
Okay.
And they do a lot of theatrical magic with it.
Mm-hmm.
They don't use a lot of projections. It's all brick and mortar set pieces, but they're small. But what they do with the lighting in conjunction with the set is really, really incredible. And how it functions is incredible. I think it will win Best Scenic Design. But that being said, I saw Three Tall Women last night, and That set is gorgeous. And the scene two, have you seen it? I forget.
No, I haven't seen it yet.
After the like brief break between acts one and two, they don't do an intermission. They just go straight in. There's like a gasp worthy moment leading into scene two or act two, however you want to qualify it. That's gorgeous. And I love that set, but I do think that Christine Johns will win for Harry Potter, most likely.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. Very cool.
Yeah.
Best performance. Now we're getting into performances, folks.
Okay.
Best performance by an actress in a featured role in a play. It's a long one. Susan Brown for Angels in America. Uh-huh. She plays the mama. Noma Dumezweni?
I think it's Dumezweni, but I
that was good when you said it.
Might be wrong.
No, I think you're probably right. That's Harry Potter and the Cursed Child, parts one and two. Deborah Finley for the children. Denise Goff. Denise, who's going to probably win the Tony.
Right.
In America. And then Laurie Metcalf for Three Tall Women.
We love Laurie Metcalf, and we. I think you're right. It's going to be.
She's good. She's real good.
Yeah.
With her
Harper. Yeah.
That's one of the hardest roles in the show. I mean, I know all the roles are challenging, but her especially. Yeah.
It's relentless.
Her role is relentless, and the emotional journey that she goes on.
Oh, yeah.
It's incredible, and she hits every single note, I think, pretty brilliantly.
Yeah, I loved her. I loved Susan Brown in Angels in America, too. I thought she was incredible in all of her roles, because she does multiple roles.
Mm-hmm.
I thought Hannah Pitt was her weakest role. I thought as the rabbi, and I thought as... The Bolshevik at the top of part
two.
Yeah,
when she wasn't the mom, I thought she was fantastic.
And as, why can't I think of, it's like my favorite character in the show too, and I can't think, the ghost of Ethel Rosenberg.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, right.
I thought she was great as that too. Hannah was fine, but I thought her other performances were actually better. I'm a little sad Alison Pill wasn't nominated in this category.
I'm sorry, Alison.
She'll be back.
She'll be back. Best performance by an actor in a featured role in a play. Anthony Boyle, Harry Potter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Michael Cera, Lobby Hero. Brian Tyree Henry, Lobby Hero. Nathan Lane, Angels in America. And David Morse, The Iceman Coming.
Your favorite.
Yeah.
I need a cigarette.
I know,
now.
Geez, Rob.
His performance is so good.
Yeah.
I have nothing else to say. His performance is so good.
Yeah. I've heard that from everybody. Hopefully I'll get tickets next week to see him. But
this is a pretty strong category, guys.
So I have a lot of thoughts about this category.
Yeah.
If you'll indulge me
for
a second.
Please.
First of all, Michael Cera, I thought was great.
That's what I've heard.
He's him
really
as
good.
Actor.
But he should not be in this category. He's the lead of this play.
He's the lead of the play.
Mm. Yeah. He should be eligible in the leading category and be nominated as such, because he deserves to be.
Yeah.
If anything, I would have nominated in the featured category alongside Brian Tyree Henry from Lobby Hero. I would have nominated Chris Evans, because I thought Chris Evans was great.
I heard that too.
I thought he was fantastic, and he's definitely the definition of a featured character.
Yeah. Okay.
But other than that, and also I loved Lee Pace in Angels in America too.
Yes.
I would have nominated him.
He played Joe.
I really, really loved his performance. I thought Seth Numrick in Travesties was really great. There were a bunch of people who didn't get nominations in this category who I think deserved them. I have a feeling Nathan Lane's going to win.
Same.
Which sort of makes me sad, because as much as I liked him, he is doing the same thing he always does.
But he was the driving force behind this play,
mm-hmm.
it getting done. He, you know, helped bring it here. I think the producers will know that. The voters know that. He's, you know,
For me, of the performances that I saw, I haven't seen David Morse yet, of the ones that I saw, Anthony Boyle deserves this, hands down.
Oh, wow.
Who does he play in Harry Potter?
Scorpius Malfoy, which is Draco Malfoy's son and best friend of Harry Potter's son. And he's sort of the driving kind of catalyst of the play. He's phenomenal.
Yeah.
Big breakout role for him.
Really
young kid.
Good.
He's incredible.
For me, it's a will win, should win situation.
Right.
And I think Nathan Lane will win.
I agree. Yeah.
Although, as brilliant as he is, I see this every time he's on.
Right.
He's great at what he does. I'm not seeing anything incredible.
Right.
With David Morse, you see something really incredible.
I can't wait to see that.
Rob any of these guys of the brilliant performances they're giving in. And I hope that David Morse comes back, because you sit there and you go, I can think of 90 other roles I want to see you tackle in this moment.
Yeah.
He's so good.
Yeah.
I'm done. Best performance by an actress in a leading role in a play. We have Glenda Jackson for our Three Tall Women, Condola Rashad for St. Joan, Lauren Ridloff for Children of a Lesser God, and Amy Schumer for Meteor Shower.
This is an interesting category.
So fun fact about this, they could have nominated five women in
exactly.
this category. There were enough eligible nominees where they could have nominated five.
Who would have been the fifth?
Well, I had Elizabeth McGovern because I thought they were going to snub Uma Thurman. Instead, they just didn't nominate either of them.
Oh. I forget what the rule is for the number of nominees.
It's
the thing.
If you have seven or more, then it's usually an automatic five.
Gotcha. And if they tie, then that's when they add the sixth.
Exactly.
Gotcha.
Which is what happened for the musical side, which is
right.
crazy to me.
Nuts.
So the fact that they only nominated four.
It's crazy.
You know, that tells you something. And of those four, the fact that Amy Schumer's on that list, in another year, I don't think she would have been nominated. But I do think she's one of the four strongest of the eligible women in this category.
Mm-hmm. And there's the old rewarding the Hollywood actor. We were mm-hmm. talking about that.
And yeah, which is please come back to us.
Yeah. Yeah. But she was surprisingly good.
That's what I heard.
I didn't see Uma Thurman, but from what I've been told, it was not a good performance. And so she, you know, Amy was good. Amy made me laugh the entire time.
Good. Okay, yeah. great.
Did she win?
No, God, no.
Glenda Jackson.
Glenda Jackson. this is maybe the easiest category to predict.
You're welcome. Yeah. You're welcome, Glenda.
Yeah.
Best performance by an actor in a leading role in a play. Andrew Garfield, Angels in America, Tom Hollander, Travesties, Jamie Parker, Harry Potter, Mark Rylance, Farinelli, and The King, and then Denzel Washington in The Iceman Cometh.
A lot of good actors in that category.
Yes.
Good group.
I mean, real actors.
Yeah.
Yes, some of them are movie people, but they are great actors.
This is another will win, should win situation for me. I mean, I think it's pretty universally expected that Andrew Garfield's going to win, which is, to me, unfortunate. He was one of the issues that I had with this revival. I liked him, but I didn't love him. And I saw Michael Urie do that role back in the Off-Broadway revival a few years back.
And that's still in your mind.
It's still in my mind, and that performance was incredible.
And Justin Kirk in the movie was genius as well, right? That's a hard one to get out of your mind. Okay.
The winner should be Tom Holland over Travesties, who is incredible. It is such a good performance, but because it's such a small revival, it's not getting the traction that I think it deserves.
Yeah. Yeah.
His performance is crazy good, but it's going to be Andrew Garfield, I think.
Okay, great. I would agree with that.
Me
agree.
Too.
Best revival of a play: Angels in America, Three Tall Women, The Iceman Cometh, Lobby Hero, and Travesties.
Man, it was a year of revivals for this category.
That's the thing, these categories are stuffed full of revivals.
And the nice thing is all of these revivals got fantastic reviews.
Yes,
these ones. Yeah, these were
because usually there's a couple that they pad in there.
Right,
which I kind of see in our best play category.
That's the thing.
To be
when
honest
we get to that, you're
going
to see it. Yeah.
So I mean, I would be surprised if Angels in America did not walk away with the best revival of a play. And based on this list, I think deservedly so.
Yeah. I mean, having seen all of these except Iceman Cometh, I would be happy with any of them winning. Except, I mean, I don't know about that one, but I loved all of them for different reasons.
And then finally, our last category, where I'm really the weakest because I've seen the least, so forgive me.
Same.
Best Play, The Children by Lucy Kirkwood, Farinelli and the King by Claire Van Kampen, Harry Potter and the Cursed Child Parts 1 and 2 by Jack Thorne, Junk by Ayad Akhtar. Did I say that right?
Yeah.
And Latin History for Morons by John Leguizamo.
That was a surprise.
That was the surprise, right?
I was a little surprised.
The John Leguizamo one?
Yeah.
If there was
it's great, but it was,
The fact that it was a weak year for plays and they didn't need to nominate five plays and they chose to.
Yes.
I would have taken Junk off this list, honestly, before I took off Latin History for Morons.
Fair.
Honestly, if we were going to go to four.
I'm just surprised that if there were five, that Meteor Shower
I was just going to say that.
Or 1984. It's a little surprising that.
Yeah, 84 surprised me.
Yeah, it's a little surprising what got in.
But it's hard because those shows that open right at the fall, you don't really remember come nomination time.
84 was like summer. I mean, that was
literally
before
summer.
The summer.
Yeah.
And like last Boys in the Band, which I just saw a couple of nights ago, I think it's honestly so fabulous.
I hear it's so good.
It's just, I'm hoping people remember it come a year from now because the production really is, I think, stellar. But I think we can all agree this is Harry Potter.
In 1984, I'll remind you that,
sorry,
1984 was deemed ineligible for the Tony Awards.
Why was it deemed
early?
Ineligible?
And then April 2018, they reversed the decision, which it's like, that doesn't look very good for 1984. I mean, for it not, and then to say yes, and
what happened on that story was that the producers of the show didn't offer a free ticket to one of the members of the Tony Awards committee, yep. the administration committee. So because they didn't do that, it was deemed ineligible.
Why would they not give it to?
Well, that's a story for another day.
But
there was a little political situation going on. But then that member recused himself from voting.
Well, what was the issue? You don't have to mention names, but what was the
issue? Oh, apparently it was a bad review of a prior show.
Oh, and so it was sassy sassy.
It was okay. Sassy McSasserton.
Wow.
But then that voter recused himself from voting in that category, so because that person didn't have to see the show any longer, the show
and
was
And they don't think
eligible.
Politics is in this.
I know.
yeah, but Harry Potter's going
to
win.
And right. Meanwhile, in addition to Harry Potter just being so superior to all of these things anyway, it's also the only one that's open. Every other new play this season closed before February.
Good call, Ryan. Yeah,
like
you're,
right. Yeah.
You're no exactly contest. Right.
Yeah. Okay. Well, this is what we were guessing for best play. Mm-hmm. The nominees. We'll see what we're correct with. We'll see what we're incorrect with. Mm-hmm. And in the meantime, listeners, reach out to us. Tweet us.
What do you think?
Instagram us. Facebook us.
What are your picks?
Call Kevin personally on his phone number, which
sure.
I posted on Twitter.
That's great.
He likes calls at 2 in the morning, usually.
Yeah, yes. Oh, yeah.
To discuss St. Joan, one of his favorite plays.
That's right.
He can't wait. All right. And a big thanks to our wonderful Brian Hogwood for joining us for a third year.
Thanks for having me.
Till next time.
Bye, everybody.
Good day, Mr. Thomas.
Good day, Mr. Schneider.
Well, it has happened. We finally hit over 100 iTunes reviews, and we'd like to thank each and every person who took the time to do so.
Huzzah! Now, huzzah. We want to climb those charts even faster, and that is where you lovely folks who have not yet rated us come in.
The process is very simple. On your podcast app, tap the search tab, enter our name, behind the curtain, Broadway's Living Legends, tap the search key, tap our beautiful logo, tap the reviews, tap write a review, then tap your way into our hearts.
Tap your troubles away. That's nice, Rob. Once you are there, you can rate us from 1 star to 5 stars. Think of 1 star as Hervé V... Rob, how do you say this name?
Hervé Villechel.
Oh, dear God. I walked right into that one. Think of 1 star as Hervé Villechel and Ema Sumac in Sideshow, and 5 stars as front row seats to the opening night of Gypsy.
But he kissed me. Yeah, they kissed me for the first time.
I thought that was pretty good.
We want to get good reviews, Rob. We want to get good reviews.
Excuse me, Arthur Lawrence. Excuse me for trying to liven up our commercial ads a little bit.
8-minute-long commercial.
It's an infomercial at this point. I'm going to be like that lady that sells you the copper pots.
Look at this. You can put 400 pounds of manure in it, and it slides right out. Then you can make an omelet.
You got another line, Kevin.
I'm waiting for you to say, plus you can leave your comment and let us know if you're liking what guests are like.
Plus
next.
You can leave a comment to let us know what you are liking, what you're not liking at this point, or what guests you'd like to hear next.
So head on over to iTunes and let us know what you think of our little show.
Speaking of little, I'll tell you a story about Charles Lawton later.
Thanks, guys.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.